everyone. My name is Kate Glasper. I'm presenting on behalf of my other author, who couldn't be here today. So this presentation is about an ongoing randomized cluster trial, and this is primarily a methodological presentation about how we got to this rating, and then very exciting, maybe not to you, but to me, I'm finally able to start sharing some interim data. So, I have no relationships to disclose. And my overview for today, I'm going to kind of contextualize child maltreatment for you, talk about the multiple risk factors on different levels of the social ecological model, and then talk about our intervention that really seeks to address multiple risk factors, both on the parent side but also on the child side. Go over how we braided it, share the exciting results, in my opinion, and then talk about the future implications for this. So, I'm sorry for the redundancy for some of you, but you might not know. In 2012, 3.4 million children were reported to Child Protective Services, and of those 3.4 million, 686,000 were substantiated victims of child maltreatment. And of that, right, over 78% of those cases were attributed to neglect alone. And we've seen over the last two or so decades significant declines in physical abuse and sexual abuse, but neglect has stayed pretty consistent. And so the work that I'll present today does actually focus mostly on neglect prevention. So the social ecological model of health, it's a prevention framework, and you know, it's a little simplistic, but I think it is cross-cutting and cross-disciplines, and I think it's useful to talk through. So it's a prevention framework, like I said, and it's a way to map both risk factors and outcomes, but also to identify places for intervention opportunity. So, So on the intrapersonal level, the age of the child and the child's maybe special needs are risk factors. On the interpersonal level, this is where the parent's lack of knowledge about parenting in general and also child development can pose a risk. Also, parental substance use or victimization history themselves. Their age, the younger, the more likely the child will be victimized, and their marital status. On the organizational level, when parents have low educational attainment or low income, they're also at increased risk for maltreatment. And community-wise, these things all go together, so I'll put them together. But social isolation and violence and poor social communities and social support all increase risk. So opportunities for intervention, risk factors, and you can see where the child outcomes also come to play. So for child maltreatment, we've got numerous treatments, and this is just a small smattering of them. Many. And there's a push, obviously, to become more evidence-based, but if you do a little digging, you'll find that most interventions still happen with non-evidence-based practices. So, numerous treatments, equally numerous foci. Some of these programs focus on birth to five, some focus all the way up to 18, some focus prenatally. There we've just got a smattering of different areas where we try and approach things. And what happens is families, given these multiple risk factors, often receive multiple interventions almost always concurrently. So we're talking about a family who's struggling to make ends meet, who has limited time and has maybe required or also self-selected into services that are eating up at their time to go out and make money. So despite what I said and how they're all different, there are some commonalities. I like to be hypocritical of myself. So the commonalities are that most of these treatments are rooted in social learning theory and applied behavior analysis, which means that it's structured and manualized, that they use role-playing, which is my favorite part, and they use performance criteria, which the client has to meet before you can move on to the next skill. There's a push for these services to be delivered in-home because it does reduce some of the implementation barriers, such as getting there and having something to do with your child, but also eliminate stigma and having to go somewhere more importantly to me, is that it's generalizable. This is where the problems are occurring with your child. Let's fix it there versus in a clinic. Another approach is there's group sessions, but overall, we're working through the parents to help the child. So this is our first attempt to bring together two of these different foci, right, these different interventions, and it's parents as teachers and safe care. So it's a cluster randomized trial, and that means that agencies are randomized versus individual families. It's funded by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and the overall question is, do families who receive these braided parents as teachers and safe care services end up having better outcomes for their families as a whole? And we're looking at parenting, child development and school readiness, but then also a reduction in the risk of child maltreatment. And this is scientific, right? This is a beast of a study. It's occurring in 3 states and it's 6 years long. So we're in the middle of that now. So now I'm going to take a step back, describe for you these two interventions and our approach to braid them together. Just kidding. First, I'm going to tell you how we randomized. I already said it's clusters, but basically we randomized, found sites, then randomized them to either learning this braided curriculum that we made or delivering their standard services as usual, which is parents as teachers. Then the families are selected based on eligibility criteria, and they receive the service that their site was trained to deliver. Okay, now, this is what I thought I would do. Safe Care, it's a evidence-based parent training program, and we focus specifically on families who are either at risk or who are already involved with child welfare. And we do this through we focus primarily on the prevention of neglect, and we do this through 3 modules. So there's 4 here, I'm aware. But parent-child interaction or parent-infant interaction, it's dependent on the age of the child, which one the family gets. The overall focus is to improve the interaction between parent and child, but you might infer the challenges with an infant are a bit different than what they would be with a 3-year-old. So in parent-child interaction, we focus on ways to reduce problem behaviors, and in parent-infant interaction, we focus on bonding. And in both, we also talk about development and fun activities. So the other 2 modules, we have got home safety, where we go through and identify and reduce hazards in the home. And then child health, we give the parents concrete steps to identify and then determine how to treat illnesses and sicknesses. As I said, this is mostly for families who are either at risk or already involved with child welfare. So that kind of tells you who the clients are. It's also short. We've got 18 sessions. We're in and out of the home fairly quickly. Now, conversely, parents as teachers is focused on the child, and they focus on child development and school readiness specifically. They have both group sessions and home visits, and the frequency with which the sessions are delivered depends on the risk level of the family. So if you're at high risk, you'll be seen twice a month versus low risk once a month. And parents as teachers works with every child in the home. Safe care works with one. And I'm hinting at this challenge we've had trying to braid the two together. Parents as teachers, the families are always volunteer. They could be at risk, but they're not necessarily involved with child welfare services. And so, one more thing to say, parents as teachers has 3 components in every visit. It's parent-child interactions, development-centered parenting, and family well-being. So those three components are included in every session, but the parent gets to prescribe what they want to talk about in every session. So, recap. Safe care, manualized. We lay out exactly what's going to happen in every session for families who are already at risk or involve with child welfare. Parents as teachers is parent-driven, but it's focused on child outcomes. And it could work with multiple children in the home. I met a woman who worked with the same family for 11 years. Boggles my mind. So, putting these two together, the braiding, this was quite a process. And the way we got here, I got trained in parents as teachers and in safe care. And then I made an attempt at putting the two together. We reduced the number of safe care sessions. Typically it's 6 sessions per module, but we reduced it down to 4. Because we thought that the kind of rapport that the family already had with their service provider, they didn't need as much practice sessions. And that was right on. So made attempt 1 at braiding it. We ran through a pilot with different families and different parent educators doing each one of the modules. And then we interviewed them at the parents, the providers, and the site supervisors and took their feedback and redid everything. Basically, what we found was that the parent educators needed something way more concrete to walk through every session. They couldn't be creative enough to put it together on the fly. It's fine. I understand that. And what was most challenging was finding the right people to be at the table. It was important to keep the fidelity of each of the module, of each of the curricula, intact. So, this is a blank slide. This is what it ended up looking like. We took the safe care outline and integrated parents as teachers content into it. I used familiar symbols, that's the parents as teachers logo, to identify which parts they already knew. And then I extracted language from their sessions and put it right into what we have. I color-coded things so that blue was what they already knew, black was safe care. I identified the difference between safe care documents, and then I pulled out specific parents as teachers handouts for each session. The main reason being that they have about 5,000 extra handouts they could give to their families, and sorting through that was too much. So then we have a step-by-step. Parents educators usually start out with this toolkit, reading through it with the family, and then as they get more comfortable, they can kind of wing it. But it's a detailed session outline, and the italics are exactly what they should say. So that was like a year and a half of my life, summed down into 3 slides. So as of September 2014, here's where we are with our sample. We've got 110 females, which isn't surprising, but the age is a little high when I think about what's typical of child maltreatment. The mean age was almost 28 years old. I mean, the majority of them are married or living with their partner. And so this, at first, is shocking to me when I think about typical child maltreatment data. Then you remember that parents as teachers is voluntary. So that's why this looks the way it does. Still, though, there's very low parental educational attainment. 17% of folks have less than an 8th grade education. And this data, I should say, is only from Georgia and North Carolina. So interim analyses, we've got 2 master's theses that have used this data. And the first one looked at our home safety module to see if there was a relationship between the potential for abuse and the number of hazards that we counted in a home. And it turns out, sorry, there's in the way, that the BCAP, the brief child abuse potential inventory, which tells you how likely you are to be a perpetrator of maltreatment, is low. It's at 4.12, where the at-risk cutoff is 9. So good news, this sample is not really at risk for maltreating their child. Bad news for my hypothesis, but that's fine. but we did find a modest correlation between the hazards in the home and the potential for abuse. And I'll just say also the mean hazards found in the home was about 17, which is also really low when I think about the typical safe care families that we see where the mean is like 117 in a room. So this was an interesting first step, and it points to the significance of including safety module into what parents as teachers does. And then we're working on this actually right now. But we're looking at, again, the association between the potential for abuse and the quality of parent-infant interaction. I'm sorry, parent-infant or parent-child interaction. And we're using the Keys to Interactive Parenting Scale, KIPS. And we're finding, so these mean scores of the quality of interaction are actually pretty moderate out of a 5-point scale. They're doing okay. And we're seeing a teeny increase from baseline to 6 months that they're improving their interactions. And there isn't a significant relationship between BCAP, the prediction of abuse, and the quality of interaction. Surprising. So, what am I saying? All in all, this approach is, as I said, the first of our, to our knowledge, the first of its kind. But the approach of bringing evidence-based practices together has long been supported by federal agencies and common interest groups, specifically the Home Visiting Research Network, which is supported by HRSA. And I think that this is a first step in creating an algorithm to get families into the right services that actually meet the needs that they have. I'd hope that in the future maybe there's a way to come up with a menu option so we're not directing every family to get the same service, but really taking a look at what they need and figuring out what components could come together. And the social ecological model, I'm hoping that in the long term this data shows impact across all the levels of that model. And I think in a time of limited resources, combining efforts is a way to maximize those resources and bring together a pool of money, frankly. So that's it.